Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week, or the last 5.5 weeks, 7 weeks, has been 7 weeks. We've cleared all the dust off the mixing board, and we've arrived at the, this is the new Weekly Worldview studios. They're not, the studio is not exactly soundproof. And I'm not sure how good the audio quality is going to be. This is a work in progress. You're going to have to just bear with us here. But it's good to be back. I'm joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. And it's good to come back. And it's good to be here. And so there, we have got that out of the way. Let's just move on. A lot has happened since we last went and did the podcast. We've had the year 2020 started, which is kind of interesting, cool to think about. 2020 feels like it's going to be a good year. I hope so. Let's see. American forces killed Qasem Soleimani, the head of the Al-Quds force in Iran, and Iran did nothing about it except get scared, wondering if Trump knew where they were, wondering if our special forces knew their address. Quite possibly the most significant geopolitical event since World War II. It's possibly. I mean, there hasn't been an event that changed global politics as much, I don't think, since World War II, a single event. So hats off, congratulations to the armed forces and to the president for killing Qasem Soleimani, the Iranian terrorist leader. That's good news. What else happened while we were gone? Anything else interesting? Oh, yeah, there was the impeachment of the president. Yeah, whatever. And then Kobe Bryant dying suddenly. That was shocking. That was really shocking, jarring news. And I would posit the theory that Kobe Bryant's sudden and unexpected death may have done more to get the attention of people who hadn't really thought about God before than any other event, than any other ministerial event that's put on by preachers and those who actually preach the gospel. Just the fact that he died so suddenly, things like that cause people to stop and think about their life. More so than going to church on Christmas or Easter, you know? There's a reason God... There's a reason that when mankind fell, that God instituted the death penalty upon all of us. There's a reason. It's because he knew that was probably the only way he was going to get a lot of people's attention. And so, very sad that Kobe Bryant and seven others, including his young daughter, perished in a helicopter crash. I'll tell you, when I first joined the service, the very first operation I went out on in South Korea, there were two helicopter crashes over the course of a three-week operation, and I think somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 Marines died in these two helicopter crashes. And some of my close buddies had to go there and actually see the aftermath of the helicopter crash and the fire and all the dead bodies burned beyond recognition. And I remember my buddy telling me about what he saw. And I decided at that operation that if at all possible, I would do my 4 years in the military service without ever setting foot on a helicopter. And I managed to pull that off. I never set foot on a helicopter my whole time. And I was in a squadron in the air wing in the Marine Corps where I was surrounded by helicopters all the time, but I never got on one. And I lay some of the blame for Kobe Bryant's death at the feet of the Los Angeles city planners who've just not kept up with the infrastructure. The traffic is so bad in Los Angeles that a fellow like Kobe Bryant would get on a helicopter just to hop over the traffic whenever he had things going on up north, because he lived down in Orange County. So he would hop over Los Angeles because the traffic is horrible, and it ends up costing him his life, tragically. Very sad, very sad. They need more infrastructure, more freeways, and more lanes in Los Angeles. And, well, there you have that. Now, is there anything else of massive import that I've forgotten that happened since we last got together sometime in December? And it's now February. I got a text from a concerned listener. Not a text, an instant message. Anyway, he said, "It's been 7 weeks, Doug. I hope this is not the end." And I wrote him back. I said, "It's not the end. It's just that we haven't found the studio yet. The studio was all packed in boxes. It took a while to find to get everything together. But we're glad to be back." And we start out tonight in the Just Desserts file. That's right. WGNTV.com is reporting that an Indian man named Sari Rao, 50-year-old fella there in India, he lived in southern India's Andhra Pradesh state, and he was a regular at local cockfights. That's right. And he was on his way to enter his rooster into a cockfighting competition when the rooster tried to break free. That's right. The rooster tried to break free, and Sari Rao, the Indian man, was hit in the neck with a blade tied to the rooster's claw. That's right. And he was rushed to the hospital, was this cockfighting fellow, and where he later died from a stroke. So that's he got his just desserts, and the rooster got the last laugh on the Indian fella, who is now, well, he's departed. So there you go. We have cockfights here at the McBurney compound, but we don't put any blades on our roosters, and they just fight. You can't stop them from fighting. They're trying to establish their pecking order. And so they get into, in fact, my daughter has some really cool slow motion video of the cockfights that we have here at the McBurney compound. Maybe we'll post one of those up someday, although that may not be legal. Although these weren't sanctioned cockfights and nobody was betting on them. These were just natural occurring. They just occur sometimes. All right. Now, into the biblical file. Yes, the biblical file, I said. From Zero Hedge, Tyler Durden reports that billions of locusts are eating everything in sight in East Africa right now. This is happening right now. And some experts claim that these plagues, these swarms of locusts could grow 500 times larger over the next few months as the rainy season starts. Anyway, these are swarms of locusts the size of cities, and they're consuming crops at a staggering pace. This could potentially cause famine on the African continent that is unlike anything we have ever seen before. And we've seen pretty bad famine on the African continent before. But I read a few, there's a few Facebook friends of mine who've posted some superstitious postings about the locusts. And there's nothing to be superstitious about. It's not God cursing anyone or... This just happens. The locusts are eating everything in sight in East Africa. That's kind of scary. I feel really bad for folks in Africa. It's really sad what they've gone through. And now this, it's just horrible. Ah, life is rough and mean and brutish and short. Who said that? Somebody wiser than me said that one time. All right. Meanwhile, let's have some good news. From WNEM.com, Howard Kirby. Howard Kirby purchased a couch at the Habitat for Humanity store in Owosso, Michigan. Yeah, he bought a couch in December, and after he was looking through the couch, he noticed that it felt kind of uncomfortable, you know? It just didn't quite sit right. So he opened up the couch, and he found out that it was filled with over $40,000 in cash. So some old codger had stashed all his cash in this couch, and then it ended up at the Habitat for Humanity store. And Mr. Kirby found $43,000 in there. So he reached out to the store where he where he had bought the couch to find out who had donated it. And he found out who it was. It was Kim Newberry. The couch originally belonged to her grandfather, who had died last year. And he gave her back the money, which is pretty cool. That's a really uplifting story. And we need something like that about this time with our vulgar president in the White House. I know. I listened live as President Trump held his whatever that was today, the East Room event. Some people called it a victory lap after he was acquitted. Anyway, but to just utter a vulgarity like that, a profanity live on television, it's just, anyway, it just makes me sad for the level of civility in the country. You know, he's supposed to be the good guy. I don't know. It's just distasteful. That's all. All right. So anyway, but Howard Kirby did the right thing and didn't utter any profanities live on TV that could not be bleeped. All right. Let's move on into the sad religion file. That's right, the sad religion file. 20 people died in a stampede at a church service in an open ground stadium in Tanzania. Yes, a popular preacher near Mount Kilimanjaro named Pastor Boniface Mwamposa, he poured holy oil on the ground. And the pouring of the holy oil on the ground prompted the crowd to surge forward in hopes of touching the holy oil. The rush to be anointed by the oil led to people crushing one another. 20 people died, 16 others were injured. Just horrible and shocking. This preacher should be arrested, and he should definitely be charged for just straight up chicanery. Just for being a liar and a false prophet. But I guess that's not a crime. But for getting all these people killed with this lie about his holy oil, you touch the oil, I don't know. How do people buy into that kind of stuff? I really don't get it. I think too many people think God is mystical. But he's not mystical. I think he's a lot like us. I think we could relate to him perfectly well. When we meet Jesus Christ, we'll be able to relate to him. He's not a mystical figure. And so anyway, it's just so sad that people lose their lives over something that's false and misleading and harmful, harmful to the gospel and, well, obviously, harmful to their health even. From there, we will dive right into the science, really, file, where a British astronomer, Dr. Helen Sharman, by the way, Dr. Sharman is the first British astronaut to go into space. And I didn't even know there was one of those. I didn't know the Brits ever even put anyone in space. Well, anyway, this Dr. Helen Sharman says there's no two ways about it. Aliens indeed exist. That's right, no two ways, she says. No two ways about it. There are so many billions and billions and billions of stars out there in the universe that there must be all sorts of different forms of life, said Dr. Helen. It's possible, she said, that they're here right now, and we simply can't see them, you see. Yes, that's possible. The 56-year-old, believe it or not, worked as a chemist. So this is not a stupid person. She worked as a chemist before making history as the first British astronaut. She was on the Soviet space station back in 1991. And she says there's just no issue. Okay. That's fine. This is like a weekly, in the British papers, there's a weekly headline or 10 about the aliens. I think I've told you people, I think half millennials probably think that we've already found aliens, right? If they're even paying attention to the news, which we can hope they're not paying attention to the news, because it's full of all kind of crazy lies. Lots of fake news out there. Okay, further down we dig into the science, really, file. An astronomer, Seth Shostak, back in 2012, he bet everyone in the room a Starbucks coffee that the human race would make its first contact with aliens. That's aliens within 24 years. Now, why he picked 24 years, I don't know. 2012 plus 24 would be 2036. Well, for whatever reason, he made the bet. 7 years later, that was 2012. And here now in 2020, this is actually the end of 2019, he stands by his bet. Astronomer Seth Shostak says, we will make contact with aliens within the next 16 years. He says, even just one living or dead microbe could change everything. Yes, the universe, we could conclude, he says, is teeming with life. Teeming, he says. All right. Shostak's position, according to the Daily Beast, Shostak's position is increasingly uncontroversial, they say. Is it really? Yes. More and more scientists believe that, yes, there's life beyond the Earth. Then they quote another astronomer, Martin. He says, why should we be the only ones? Why? That's right. And then the Daily Beast goes on to say, first contact looks more and more likely. So there you go. So people don't believe in God, even though it's very obvious that somebody had to have created all this order and beauty in the universe, and they choose instead to believe in something for which there is not one shred of evidence, lending credence to my axiom that atheism can definitely lead to insanity. Guitars away. It's time to get back to it. I'm not really getting into the groove. It's all, everything's new and everything looks strange and it feels out of order. And so you just have to bear with me. I'll get my groove back. It's just going to take maybe one more science really story. Maybe that'll do it. Let's give it a try. Okay. Walk with me on this one now. This is hilarious, actually. Yeah. Hilarious. Up at Montana Glacier National Park, the glaciers appear to be growing. Yes, yes, they're growing. Uh-huh. This is according to Roger I. Roots, J.D., Ph.D., and the founder of Lysander Spooner University. Uh-huh. Yes. In fact, officials at Glacier National Park up there in Montana have begun quietly removing and altering signs which had told visitors that the park's glaciers were all expected to disappear by 2020. Oh, and then it's 2020. So that kind of looks embarrassing. Oh, they did have in parentheses or possibly 2030. But now it looks increasingly unlikely that even if they wait till 2030, that the glaciers are still going to be there. They'll just be hanging on. And so they're just going to change the signs. Take the signs down. Okay. Because that's embarrassing. Let's see here. Glacier National Park's most famous glaciers, such as the Grinnell Glacier and the Jackson Glacier, appear to have been growing, not shrinking, since about 2010. Uh-huh. Yeah. In fact, the Jackson Glacier, they say, may have grown as much as 25% or more over the past decade, embarrassing all of the global warming hysterics. Yes. The signs have been replaced with more nuanced messaging indicating that everyone agrees that the glaciers are melting. Okay. Well, the fellow who wrote this article doesn't agree, so I think everyone is a bit of hyperbole. I don't think so. Everyone agrees. Okay. Let's see there. Since September of 2015, the author of this article, Roger I. Roots, Juris Doctor, physical doctor. He's got a JD and a PhD. I think that means he's a lawyer and a scientist. So he's a smart fella. Since 2015, the author has offered to bet anyone $5,000 that Glacier National Park's glaciers will still exist in 2030, in contradiction to the reported scientific consensus. To this day, none of the people who all agree that the glaciers are shrinking, none of them have taken him up on his $5,000 bet. So that kind of says something, doesn't it? I mean, people can talk and people can say a lot. But when it comes to putting your money where your propaganda is, that's when the truth comes out. So where are all these everyone's who agree? They should all be lining up to take this poor sap's money. Okay. So we go now into the justice file where, let's see, in Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, a FedEx driver was shot in the stomach during a robbery. Now, the FedEx driver was able to drive himself to a nearby parking lot away from the scene, and he told the police that after being shot, he pulled out his own weapon and returned fire at the suspect. Now, initially, the police said they didn't know whether the perpetrator had been struck by gunfire or not. Nobody was quite sure until a few minutes later when they found a 27-year-old man in a driveway suffering from multiple gunshot wounds to the chest, back, and torso. And that suspect died at the hospital, receiving the death penalty that he never would have gotten had he survived and gone on trial. He got, the FedEx driver fatally shot him. In Philadelphia. Let's see, CBS in Philadelphia asked FedEx if drivers are allowed to carry firearms, and FedEx said, "We are not at liberty to disclose the details of our internal policies." Which kind of sounds like, yeah, they are allowed to carry. Or at least FedEx wants you to think they're allowed to carry. And so, which is a wise thing. I mean, it's wise to let them carry. It's wise for people to think they're carrying, because then that could have saved this robber's life had he had a fear that he might be shot trying to rob the FedEx guy. But he probably mistakenly assumed that the FedEx guy wouldn't be allowed to carry a firearm. And he was incorrect. And sometimes when you're wrong about something, it gets you killed. So anyway, there is the death penalty for attempted murder. That's the only way anyone in America gets the death penalty for attempted murder anymore, is if the victim shoots and kills the perpetrator. And that's a sad state of affairs in our justice system. So speaking of sad states, the domestic tranquility file, Channel 8 Fox in Chicago reports that a woman is accused of stabbing her father, leaving an unresponsive baby in a bathtub, and then leaping off the 11th floor of her apartment building while holding her one-year-old son. The two children were rushed to the hospital where they died. The woman survived, and at last check was in critical condition. This was on January 2nd. Wow. Just horrifying. Horrifying. And this happens... This happens every day, in almost every day in almost every large metropolitan area in the country. There's a murder-suicide almost every day. It's shocking. Well, it should be shocking, but it's not that shocking because it happens all the time, and eventually it doesn't get shocking. More from the domestic tranquility file, this time in Boston. CBS reports that a mother of two young children who were found unconscious near a Boston parking garage on Christmas Day. Well, the police now describe it as a likely double murder-suicide. 40-year-old mother, the children 4 years old and 16 months old. It appears the two children... It appears the two children fell first and then the mother. Wow. So the mother threw her children off the top of a parking garage and then jumped to her death is what it looks like. It appears to have been a domestic... There appears to have been a domestic dispute between the children's mother and father. And there's been domestic disputes between mothers and fathers since the dawn of civilization. But only lately do people choose to murder over a domestic. Anyway, more and more, I should say. People choose murder as just one more tool in the toolbox. If you have a problem, murder is one option. And that's because we live in a society that's drenched in blood. Drenched in blood. We've murdered 60 million plus innocent children. And that basically teaches generation after generation that murder is an option. Because no matter what people say, they all know it's a baby. They all know that. Nobody's deceived into thinking they're not actually killing someone. That's not possible. People can lie to themselves, but they know. Everybody knows what it is. And now we're how many generations into the government-sanctioned, legalized, for-profit murder of innocent people? We're 3-4 generations in now. And so the blowback is getting worse and worse every year. Listen to this one from WFLA in Florida. 3 adults are dead. 4 children were removed from a home after an apparent murder-suicide in Lakeland, Florida, Christmas Eve night. All the children survived. It looks like just the mother and father killed themselves. Just tragic and horrible and awful. Wow. What happens to those kids? So sad. Wow. All right. So one good bit of news from the Justice File comes to us from Japan. The BBC reports that Japan has hanged a Chinese man. It's the first execution of a foreigner in Japan in 10 years. The man murdered some people in 2003, along with 2 accomplices. They fled to China. One of the accomplices was executed in China in 2005, and the other sentenced to life in prison. The BBC reports that Japan has more than 100 prisoners on death row. 15 were executed last year, and that sounds like a lot, but it's because 13 of them were members of the Aum Shinrikyo Doomsday Cult. You remember the gas attacks on the subways there in Japan? My goodness, how long ago was that? That had to be, 20 years ago? 15 years ago, it had to be. Anyway, so only 2 outside of the Doomsday Cult were executed last year in Japan, but a total of 15. Let's see here. Anything else here? In Japan, death row inmates are not told of their impending execution until the day it is carried out. How about that? Wow. I'm not sure. Well, I don't really have a problem with that. I have a problem with waiting 15 or 20 years to execute people. I think that the right way to do it is to give them 3 days to think about it. You tell them you're going to be executed on the 3rd day, and you throw a Bible in their cell and, you know, hope for the best. There's a chance they might come around. Give them a little bit of time to contemplate the fact that they're about to meet the Creator of the universe and the living God, and then put them to death swiftly and painfully. All right. Meanwhile, over in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, WKYT is reporting that police in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, were called out to confront a public menace at a local pharmacy. Now, when I read that sentence, I thought surely this is going to be about some vagrant or some homeless person, right? Or maybe some crazy person, looks like Charlie Manson walking around mumbling to himself. But no, it was not a homeless person. It was not a vagrant. It was not a bum. No, it was a hostile chicken. A hostile chicken who was menacing patrons. Yes. In fact, officers, when they arrived on the scene, were pecked viciously by the bird, who also made use of vehicles in the area for cover. That's right. They ended up trapping the chicken under a milk crate, finally, and they took the bird into custody. Uh-huh. The chicken was turned over to someone who can give him a more suitable accommodations, according to the police. And all of the officers involved who were pecked viciously by the bird are expected to make a full recovery. Sometimes you can't. will do, and I am your host, Doug McBurney, here with my extremely attractive audio engineer in our new unsoundproof studio that we'll be working on. It'll get better and better. All right, two hostile chicken stories that piled up over the 7 weeks since we joined you last. It's unusual to see so many hostile chicken stories. Well, the first chicken wasn't hostile, really. Actually, it was the owner with all the cockfighting and all that. That's just cruel and vicious. People who do that, well, I don't know if they deserve to have their necks slit open, but, well, it happens sometimes. So how about that? Okay. All right. Now, let us see here. I have to report on our various chicken adventures, as a matter of fact. So here at the McBurney compound, we built a chicken run, a giant chicken run. It's, I forget, 16 feet wide, 25 feet long, 12 feet high. So we moved to a place where the hawks are big and could come and take the chickens. And so we had to enclose them, whereas back at the previous McBurney compound, the chickens could run free. They were free ranging. But out here, it's a little too dangerous for that. So we built a giant cage, basically. And we made the unfortunate error initially of building it right next to our neighbor's fence. And, well, it turns out the neighbor was not pleased. We did not take into account that he previously had a lovely view of our beautiful yard, which is basically just a giant garden of all kinds of succulents and cactus, and it's just beautiful. So we start erecting this giant cage, and, well, we offended our neighbor, but we moved it. We ended up just moving it up over the hill so it was out of his view, and we made peace, and everyone in the neighborhood is happy, and all is well in the world, and the chickens are protected from the other wildlife that could come and take them away. And so we got that going on. We built a pen for our goats. So we got the goats out. Yeah, we hauled all the animals in a horse trailer over a 2-day period. And, it was quite the adventure, as a matter of fact. Pulling a trailer can be fairly embarrassing. I'll just leave it at that. Trying to back up with a trailer can be fairly embarrassing. I suggest that you have someone else do it if at all possible, because it's not really very fun. Okay, so what else? Any other fun adventures? We're trying to learn how to heat our home with 18th century technology. Mm-hmm. A fireplace. We've never used a fireplace because, I don't know, It's work and it smells, and who wants to do all that? But we've taken a shot at it. We've even managed to pull it off a few nights. But I'm not a fan of heating my house with the same technology that people used 500 years ago. It just seems like a regression. But I guess a lot of people like fireplaces. I'm just not all that. I don't know. I don't like them all that much. Okay. Let's get back into the news. Do we have any impeachment news? Oh, no, we don't have any impeachment news. And so can you imagine what's going to happen to the 24-hour cable news stations now that that whole thing is over and done with? I don't know. I would guess that their rates are their viewership will drop by 20% or more. A precipitous drop. And so anyway, they'll probably gin something else up, though. They tried this. They're trying with the virus here, the coronavirus. They're trying to see if that can maybe retain some viewership, but just it's not really scary enough. So I don't know what the next thing they gin up will be, but I'll be here to call the balls and strikes for you. All right. So let's go to the real religion file, where a founding pastor of China's Early Rain Covenant Church has been sentenced to 9 years in jail by a Chinese court for inciting subversion of state power. Boy, if you're a Christian pastor in China, there's probably nothing better for you. There's no greater badge of honor than to be charged with subversion of state power. Because if you're preaching the gospel effectively in China, you are absolutely guilty of subversion of state power. So congratulations to Wang Yi, the founding pastor, one of the founding pastors at the Early Rain Covenant Church in China. Congratulations on being charged with something so auspicious. The unfortunate thing is he could spend a long time in prison. And that's one of the, that's one of the risks you take when you preach the gospel and subvert the power of the state of China. Mr. Wang will probably preach the gospel just as effectively inside of prison. So the only way they'll be able to stop him is to kill him, which they might do. And then he goes to heaven. So who wins? Hey, Wang gets the last laugh after all. Wang was detained in December of 2018, along with others, during overnight raids across various districts of Chengdu, China, where the church was founded. Wow, like midnight raids to stamp out Christianity. That's pretty horrible what's going on in China. That's just another one of the reasons why we shouldn't be doing any business with China. No trade deals, no deals of any kind with a criminal, atheist, murderous state. Oh yeah, that kind of defines America anymore, so. Okay, unlike many Protestant house churches in China that operate underground, Early Rain members openly practice their faith, posting sermons online and evangelizing in the streets, which is fairly risky over there in China, and it's gotten Mr. Wang Yi sentenced to 9 years in jail. Wow. Yeah, China has what they call their three-self patriotic movement. That's their state-approved church. It's an atheistic, murderous, thieving church that has pictures of Jesus. That's state-sanctioned. All right. Meanwhile, from the not-so-free enterprise file, it's back to China. Listen to this. A 6-year-old girl in England discovered a desperate note in her Christmas cards from caged slaves in China forced to work against their will. It turns out Tesco, which I believe is a large grocery store chain in China, I'm sorry, not in China, in England, sources their Christmas cards from China. And so these slave laborers scrawled desperate notes in the Christmas cards that, wow. Anyway, this 6-year-old girl from South London was stunned when she opened a new box of Christmas cards to send some out to her friends, and she found a message scrawled inside. The message said, "We are foreign prisoners in Shanghai, Qingpu Prison in China. We are forced to work against our will. Please help us and notify human rights organizations." Wow. I've heard of being Shanghai'd, but this is literally, these people have been Shanghai'd. That's where the term comes from. Wow. The note asks the finder to pass it on. Now listen to this. This is where it gets interesting. The note asked the finder to pass the note on to journalist Peter Humphrey, who was locked up at Qingpu Prison for 9 months until June of 2015. So you know this note is genuine, because they referred to a Westerner who was recently housed in the same prison. Wow. According to The Sun, British tabloid, the shocking discovery has raised worrying questions over Tesco's relationship with its Chinese supplier and their use of forced prison labor. Really? Is there really a concern? Does anyone doubt that there's slave labor in China? I mean, why do you think the stuff is all so cheap? We shouldn't be doing any business with China. They lock up Christians. They employ slave labor. They're a criminal atheistic state who should be ostracized from the world, a family of humanity, until they reform. That's what should happen. But instead, we're all getting cheap sneakers. It's disgusting. Okay, we'll come back to America into the domestic tranquility file, where a suspect in Texas, Harris County, I believe that's the Houston area, a suspect was accused of shooting a barber over his 13-year-old son's haircut. Yes, apparently the haircut that was given to the suspect's 13-year-old son dissatisfied the father, and so he shot the barber. Could there be more to the story? Well, there may be more to the story, but there may not be more to the story. He might have just not liked the haircut and decided he wanted to kill the barber. Because murder is one way to deal with the problem anymore. Anyway, the barber is expected to survive. Yeah. But he was shot over. Let's see. The cop says, this is one of the worst ones I've heard of. Yeah, that is pretty shocking. And there you go. There's the state of domestic tranquility in the greater Houston metropolitan area. And it's not so good, folks. Okay. Now, I told you earlier, I didn't have to tell you. I mean, everybody knows about the ostentatious killing of Qasem Soleimani, the head of the Al-Quds terrorist organization in Iran, right? Well, listen to this from the War File. Last month, a mob in Baghdad attacked the U.S. embassy. You all remember that, right? That's what I was watching on TV in the days before we packed up everything and moved. And it was all a blur, but I do remember that happening. So the mob attacked the U.S. embassy last month. Not last month now. This would have been December. And one of the people among the agitating protesters was one Hadi Al-Amiri. Yeah, a former transportation minister with close ties to Iran, who leads the Badr Corps, whatever that is over there, another one of their terrorist organizations. Well, so he was over there agitating back at the end of 2019 when they were, I don't know if they were trying to repeat the 1979 events. They were storming our embassy in Baghdad, but it was all organized by the Iranians. Anyways, it was an ugly situation. And, well, it turns out that Hadi Al-Amiri, who was one of the agitators there in Baghdad in 2011, was in the White House, was a guest of Barack Obama. That's right. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, the Iraqi prime minister at the time, brought his transportation minister Al-Amiri to a meeting at the White House. And who knows? Maybe Barack Obama and Al-Amiri sat down and read Rules for Radicals together. I mean, who knows what happened at the meetings? Let's see. At the time, back in 2011, various news outlets expressed concern that Al-Amiri had ties to the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, which, you know, the FBI stated played a role in the 1996 terrorist attack that killed 19 servicemen. President Donald Trump designated the Iranian Revolutionary Guard a foreign terrorist organization. And this is the first time an official arm of a foreign state has received that designation. Again, the killing of Qasem Soleimani has so changed the political landscape on a global level. I should just say the presidency of Donald Trump has so changed the political landscape globally that there just hasn't been anything this significant since, I don't believe, World War II. I can't think of an incident where one nation, and I'm talking about a world power, you know, a Britain, a France, an Iran, a United States of America, a Canada. I just can't remember a time when one state killed an official of another state, like in broad daylight, and said, yeah, we did it. That just hasn't happened, I don't think, since World War II. So things have changed. Have they gotten better? Well, together, I guess we'll wait and see. We'll be right back.
review.
And I'm Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Thank you, boys. Appreciate that. That was the lick that made me want to become a guitar player right there. I heard that lick and I was like, man, I really want to do that. And I never was able to pull it off, so never did really become a guitar player. But that's all beside the point. Let's go instead of discussing my tragic musical career. Instead, we'll go to reason number 1,214 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Yes. There's no real gentle way to put this, but the New York Post reports that Department of Education Deputy Chief of Staff David Hay has been arrested. That's right. He was arrested at Mitchell International Airport in Milwaukee on charges of using a computer to facilitate a child sex crime. This is a Department of Education Deputy Chief of Staff, I said. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have evidence that he intended to meet with a minor boy in order to molest the boy. He had been under investigation for several months. The senior Department of Education administrator works on the Department of Education's Equity and Excellence Initiative. Uh-huh. That sounds like a make-work job. It's for someone's creepy uncle. Uh-huh, this is the creepy uncle, right? Who gets the make-work job at the Equity and Excellence Initiative, and it turns out he's actually a child molester. Just shocking. Let's see. He served as a principal in the Milwaukee area before being hired by the Department of Education, as a special assistant to the chancellor, under then-chancellor Carmen Farina, who, as far as we know, has not yet been accused of molesting children. The chancellor. I didn't know we had chancellors in America. That's when you know you have too big of a bureaucracy. You end up with chancellors. You end up sounding like you're European. The Equity and Excellence Initiative. All right. So this creep was caught with trying to facilitate a crime with a child. Let's see. He was touted as a man who leads a comprehensive organizational effectiveness and change management strategy for the New York City Department of Education. That's according to his LinkedIn account. Yeah, and he's also apparently a child molester and a homo creep. What a total creep. Anyway, there you go, folks. Reason number 1,214 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. The bureaucracy overseeing the implementation of school policy is full of child molesters. Anyway, people think that I'm a little too verbose about the schools being filled with child molesters and perverts and creeps and queers. But I don't think that's an overstatement to say that the schools are full of child molesters and creeps and perverts. You know, some of the perverts aren't homos. Some of them are just atheists who are molesting the children psychologically and spiritually, but they're all creeps. Anyone who would institute and deliver the curriculum as it exists in the public schools today, anyone who would do that, in my book, is a creep. There you go. Anyone who would actually try to teach children what they're being told to teach them in the public schools, at the very least, you're a creep. And I have zero respect for you, and I hope that you would repent because you're in danger of losing your soul for all of eternity because you're basically molesting the minds of children, innocent children who never did anything to you. All right. Let's go now to the dim new world file, to Austin, Texas, for a report on the homeless community. It's the homeless community. Mm-hmm. There's a state-sanctioned campground in East Austin, and the bums and the vagrants who live there in the homeless community have organized themselves into their own town. They've formed a government. Yes, they've selected 7 members to help bring in donations and put together community events. Yes, this campground has become home to more than 100 people. 100 homeless bums, and Fox 5 in Austin doesn't really help these people. Fox 5 reports that it's home to more than 100 people without another place to go. Really? Is that what they are? They're just people without another place to go? Well, let's think about that for a second. If you've gotten to a place in your life where you're living outside and eating from garbage cans, and no one you know will let you come over to their house, well, there's a pretty good chance that you're a loser, and you've burned and robbed and insulted and hurt everyone in your life to the point where no one will even let you come over to their house. It's not that you don't have another place to go. It's that you've made it so you have no place to go. That's that, and so there's that. And then there's the genuinely mentally disturbed people who should be in an institution. And then there's the junkies and the alcoholics. That's your four types of homeless people. But none of them are just a person who finds themselves without another place to go. Let's see. The head of the community there, Corey, she says, "We give everybody a chance. We don't judge. We give everybody a chance." She repeats herself. Okay. She's the secretary of the community, babbling on. The camp was once referred to as Camp Abbott because then Governor Abbott opened the land to the homeless because he doesn't want to help them either, apparently. Now it's called Camp RAT, R-A-T-T, RAT. Responsible Adult Transition Town is what they, Camp RAT. And they call it a town for the homeless, run by the homeless. Must be delightful. I wonder if they would invite us to dinner, dear. They don't judge. All right. Let's see. They say they want to change the perception of the homeless community, and that's important to those living at the camp. They say we wanted to show people that we're not just criminals, drug addicts, slobs, and bums off the street. That we're actually just like anybody else, just without a house. Okay. All right. I mean, if you want to try to pass yourself off as just like anybody else with just without a house, well, you're deluding yourself. You're not really helping yourself. And I think a good number of these people, they prefer life on the streets because they have no responsibilities and no obligations. And some people are just not very ambitious and they're just willing to exist like an animal. And it's really sad. Society should be structured in a way that severely discourages this type of attitude from taking hold of people. But you can see that the homeless populations across all metropolitan areas, the homeless populations are exploding. Why is that? Well, it's because we're allowing this type of mentality to be treated as respectable. And it should be taboo. But anyway, but it's not. All right. Because everybody's so nice. Everybody wants to be so nice. Yeah, you be too nice to people, they end up destroying their own lives. You got to be kind of rough and firm with people at some point. Like, no, you can't sleep in the street. No, you can't pee in the street. I'm sorry. All right. Anyway, let's see. One of the vagrants. One of the hapless vagrants says, "A lot of us have high school diplomas. We have college degrees. We've been in the workforce. We've been managers." Okay, well, I'm sure that's true. Right now, according to, Fox 5 in New York, right now the community is focused on finding food donations. Okay, well, what about the workforce that guy just mentioned? Why don't they focus on getting people back into the workforce? How about that? Apparently that's not top on the list. Food donations is okay. The committee says theft, violence, and drug use is not tolerated at Camp RAT, which I doubt seriously is true. What more do you want to say about that? Austin, Texas. All right. Okay. You people are so nice. You're just so, so nice. All right. Now to the justice file, where the Justice Department, the Federal Justice Department, has announced that they plan to crack down on violent crime in 7 of the nation's most violent cities. Uh-huh. Yeah, Attorney General William Barr announced Operation Relentless Pursuit. Yeah, mm-hmm. He says they're going to intensify federal law enforcement resources in Detroit, Albuquerque, Baltimore, Cleveland, Kansas City, Memphis, and Milwaukee, which all have violent crime rates above the national average. Here, now we get to what it's really all about. They are going to dole out about $70 million in federal grant money. That's right. That's how they're going to crack down on crime. So $71 million. They're going to, okay, let's see. Barr? I know who he is. He's the Attorney General. All right. He is an ardent backer of law enforcement, according to the Associated Press story here. And he has helped seriously cut down the nation's violent crime rate. Really? Well, I guess if you just look back to the 90s, I guess it would look that way. But if you look back any further, the violent crime rate is out of control. Barr also embraced the First Step Act, which released countless criminals back into the civilian population. Here's the thing, folks. You don't need $70 million if you want to actually reduce violent crime. All you need to do is start punishing criminals appropriately. If someone commits a violent crime, well, 9 times out of 10, they should probably be put to death. Or severely experience some severe corporal punishment. And that wouldn't cost, well, it would cost a lot less than housing them in prisons. But I don't really think Attorney General William Barr really understands how to crack down on violent crime. I don't think he understands. I don't think the president understands. I don't think anyone in our government understands how to actually crack down on violent crime, because they've all been raised and taught and educated on how to manage the criminal justice industry. It's an industry. It's an industry that lawyers and judges and policemen and governing officials, they all make their living on criminal activity. There's a whole industry now that has now churned out, I don't know, 10 generations of people who are so far removed from any knowledge of how to actually reduce crime that there's just no chance that the industry is going to shrink anytime soon. But anyway, they could tune in here, and there's some other sources they could tune into that could help them understand how to actually reduce violent crime, but they don't really have an interest in actually reducing long-term crime for any sustained period of time because, well, that's how they make their living. Speaking of all that, let's go to the Justice File, where Kansas, the state of Kansas, is preparing now for... How are they going to deal with the hundreds of aging inmates who are going to require expensive specialized care as they approach the end of their lives while in prison? Yes. Let's see. Kansas City. This is the Kansas City Star newspaper, which is probably only online anymore. But they say that this is a challenge for a system in chronic crisis from overcrowding and staff shortages. So to stabilize and improve prisons, officials are pursuing almost contradictory goals. Yes, they say a sweeping criminal justice overhaul is necessary in order to cut the prison population. So you know what that means? They're going to legalize more crimes so that fewer people go to jail. They say the long-term goal remains a smaller prison population. And so when you read that, if that's your long-term goal, is just a smaller prison population, you have disqualified yourself from participating in the justice system. I'm sorry, you're out, you're gone. Go run a shoe store, or maybe you could be an assistant manager at McDonald's, but you're not going to be involved in the justice system. They plan to spend all kinds of money on new space to reduce overcrowding, expensive services to house elderly inmates, and rehabilitation for those with substance abuse issues, yada, yada, yada. So again, it's all about, $13.5 million over the next 2 years they plan to spend. That's how much it's going to cost. That's what they're requesting in the budget, another $13.5 million. In order to better manage the criminal justice industry. You could take the word justice out of it. It's just a crime industry. So there's, the criminals are one end of the crime industry, and then the governing officials who process the criminals in and out of prison are the other end, and it's a circular type thing that, Okay, well, that's the state of justice here in America. All right, I felt like that show was not very good, but I'm gonna put it out there because it's all I've got, folks, and I'm hoping that I'll be back on my game next week. I can't guarantee it, but I hope you'll tune in and find out. And feel free to send me critical emails and texts and other forms of communication because I have thick skin and maybe it'll make me a better host. All right, that's it, folks. How do I end the show? I can't remember how I end the show. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and at AmericanRightToLife.com and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I want to thank all of them and my extremely attractive audio engineer, who's also very cold. But she made it. We made it through. All right, that's it. I want to thank you all. And until we come back, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.